We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, 6th chapter, verses 1 through 45, and 6th canto, 7th chapter, verses 1 through 20. That's 65 verses today only. Today we'll do less. So, verse 1. Shishukuvacha tatapachet so sikyam. Anuni tasayam bhava shastim sanjanayam masa vitri pitri vatsala. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, "My dear King, thereafter, at the request of Lord Brahma, Prajapati Daksha, who is known as Prachetasa, begot 60 daughters in the womb of his wife Asikni. All the daughters were very affectionate toward their father." So what do you remember from Burijan's class last Thursday? Sankirtan.
curses Narada Muni.
Daksha curses Narada Muni. Yes. If we preach, we have to tolerate. Yes, Narada was not fighting, and actually it was very conducive for his preaching to travel and not stay in one place for very long. Vanamali. Yes, he should have left the place, actually. So he stayed there to reduce Daksha's anger. So did he reduce Daksha's anger by staying there?
No, actually
he's waiting. He was waiting. Actually, today we'll find out that actually it did happen and Daksha did repent. Today we'll find out, I think. Or sometime along the line we'll find out. Anything else from... Yes, Lilashuk? Yes, Daksha says, you cannot renounce unless you experience the misery of this material world. First you have to be miserable, then you can renounce. But does it happen? Do people become miserable and then renounce? No. They become miserable and then they try again and try again to enjoy in this world. Okay, anything else, Damana Krishna? Same thing. Okay, can you flip the flip chart? It's going to be a lot of work on the flip chart today. So these are his arguments. My sons are not free from debts. You're a devotee in dress only. Renunciation without knowledge does not bring detachment. First you must suffer before you can renounce. And real piety is what I'm doing, following the rituals and yajnas. So he cursed Narada, and Narada said, "Tad badham, I accept the curse." Okay, so you can just leave it there for now. And then we'll see how we go. So one thing that struck me about the purports of what Burijan Prabhu spoke on last Friday was how Srila Prabhupada says, "I am also cursed. I'm in Parampara from Narada Muni, I am also cursed." So I'm hoping, he says, "I'm cursed by the parents of my disciples." So he asked in the purport, he asked his disciples to take the curse. He says, "I can transfer the curse to my disciples so that they may travel and I may sit down and translate Srimad Bhagavatam." But did that happen? No. Prabhupada was traveling right up to the end. Practically, he couldn't walk. He was bedridden, and still he went to London to preach. So, but now that Prabhupada has left, it seems that some of our sannyasi preachers have taken their curse. Any examples of Jayapataka Maharaj? Yes, Jayapataka Maharaj is in the Guinness World Book of Records for the person who has most traveled on airplanes in the world. He has the record of devotees, non-devotees, everyone. It's Jayapataka Maharaj. I know one time I was traveling also in the summer in Europe and Russia, and wherever I would meet him, practically everywhere I went. But usually I would stay, you know, like a week or at least 5 days, and he was like 1 day, 2 day, 3 days at the most. It's like he was staying. And then when he gave a class, he would say, "Well, I was 1 day here and 2 days there and 1 day here and half day here," and he would just tell all about his preaching. And so that's also Gopal Krishna Maharaj has also, I think, taken that curse. He's always traveling around. So one time a reporter asked Srila Prabhupada, "Where do you live? Where's your place?" He says, "I live in the 747 jet airplane. That is my home." And so this is the curse of the preacher. So the daughters, so finally Daksha realized it's not good to have sons, better to have daughters. And this is in the purport of the first verse. Prabhupada says, after the incidents concerning the loss of his many sons, Daksha repented his misunderstanding with Narada Muni. So Narada actually did save him. He was the last one. Narada saved all the descendants in the family of Uttanapad. And Daksha was the only one he couldn't save. And here, actually, Daksha did repent his misunderstanding. Lord Brahma then saw Daksha and instructed him to beget children again. This time, Daksha was very cautious to beget female children instead of male children, so that Narada Muni would not disturb them by urging them to accept the renounced order. Yes. Okay, Srila Prabhupada didn't follow in the footsteps. He had sons and daughters, both. And he disturbed the daughters too, yes. He disturbed the daughters. One time, one of Prabhupada's daughter's parents came to see Srila Prabhupada, and he was saying, your daughter will save you, actually. And so daughter in Kali Yuga, pretty much equality is there as far as spiritual life. So we'll read now some of these verses, and then I'll tell you when to flip the flip chart. So these are the 60 daughters of Daksha. He gave 10 daughters in charity to Dharmaraj, Yamaraj, 13 to Kashyap, first 12, and then one more, 27 to the moon god, and two each to Angira, Kshatriya, and Bhuta. The other four daughters are given to Kashyap. Thus Kashyap received 17 daughters in all. So you can follow this flip chart. No, it's okay. You don't have to. Just look at it. You can see, the top.
15 and then two more.
Oh, 15? Yeah, anyway, 17 is the total for Kashyap. Yamaraj got 10, Soma 27, Angira 2, Kshatriya 2, and Bhuta 2. And what will you do with all those wives? Even 2 is too much. Does it add up? I don't know. Is one missing somewhere? 27, 2, 4, 6, 14? No, it adds up to 60 here. So, yes? He was, no. DT and a DT, right. DT and a DT. What's that? Yes, well, we'll see. This is his second birth now. This is his second birth. The first birth, he had different daughters. He had different. So you can't go in previous births like that. This is now Daksha's second birth. It's his second set of daughters. Yeah, Kashyap married Diti.
Which were offsprings of Daksha.
Yes.
So he's his grandfather of Jayan.
His grandfather of Jayan Vijay. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Yes, yes. That'll come in this whole chapter, I think. Okay, let's keep going. We got a lot to go. Now, verse 3, please hear from me the names of all these daughters and their descendants who filled all the three worlds. So I'll just read the names of these are the wives of Yamaraj. Banu Lamba Kakut Yamir Vishwa Sadhya Marutati Vasimuhurta Sankalpa Dharma Patmya Sutan Shunu. So I just wrote like the kind of interesting ones down here, Yamaraj's wives. The 10 daughters given to Yamaraj, I said. A son named Devarishabha was born from the womb of Banu. From him came a son named Indrasena. From the womb of Lamba came a son named Vidyota who generated all the clouds. So the clouds are coming from Yamaraj. From the womb of Kakud came the son named Sankata, whose son was Kikata. From Kikata came demigods named Durga. From Yami came the son named Swarga, whose son was Nandi. Sons of Vishwa were Vishwadevs, who had no progeny. From the womb of Sadhya came the Sadhyas, who had a son named Arta Siti. Two sons who took birth from the womb of Marutvati were Marutvan and Jayanta. Jayanta, who is an expansion of Lord Vasudev, is known as Upendra. Demigods named Mohurtikas took birth from the womb of Muhurta. These demigods deliver the results of actions to the living entities of their respective times. Son of Sankalpa is known as Sankalpa, and from him lust was born. The sons of Vasu were known as the eight Vasus. Okay, so now you can flip the flip chart. Just hear their names from me. Drona, Prana, Dhruva, Arka, Agni, Dosha, Vastu, Vivavasu. From Abhimati, the wife of the Vasu named Drona, were generated the sons named Harsh, Shoka, Baya, and so on. So I put down the interesting vasus here for your information. Urjasviti, the wife of Prana, gave birth to three sons named Saha, Ayusam, Purojava. Wife of Juva was known as Dharani, and from her womb various cities took birth. So this is quite interesting how cities can take birth from the womb of somebody, but they did. From the womb of Vasana, the wife of Arka, came many sons, headed by Tarsha. And Tara, the wife of the Vasu named Agni, gave birth to many sons, headed by Javinaka. Presiding deity of the cities, right. They do have presiding deities. From Kritika, another wife of Agni, came the son named Skanda, Kartikeya, whose sons were headed by Vishaka. From the womb of Sharvari, wife of the Vasu named Dosha, came the son named Shishumara, who was an expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we heard about Shishumara in the last canto. From Angirashi, the wife of the Vasu named Vastu, was born the great architect, Vishvakarma. So Vastu, does that ring a bell? Vastu, there's a whole Vastu Shastra. He wrote a whole Shastra about how to build buildings, and Vishvakarma is the one who builds them. So his son is the architect, and he's the one who designs, who actually wrote the Shastra. Vishvakarma became the husband of Akriti, from whom the Manu named Chakshusha was born. The sons of Manu were known as Vishwadevs and Sadhyas. Usha, the wife of Vibhavasu, gave birth to three sons, Vyushta, Rochisan, Atapa. From Atapa came Panchayama, the span of day, who awakens all living entities to material activities. Sarupa, the wife of Bhuta, gave birth to the 10 million Rudras, of whom the 11 principal Rudras were Raivata, Aja, Bhava, Bhima, Vama, Ugra, Vishkapi, Ajaikapat, Ahirbhadra, Bahurupa, and Mahan. Their associates, the ghosts and goblins, who are very fearful, were born of the other wife of Bhuta. So what verse are we on now? We're in verse 19. So this Bhuta, for your information, is he married two of the daughters of Daksha. It's different from the Vasu. Different from the eight Vasus. So this is a different person here. In verse 18, Sri Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments, Bhuta had two wives. One of them, Sarupa, gave birth to the 11 Rudras, and the other wife gave birth to the associates of the Rudras, known as the ghosts and hobgoblins. So this is, of course, the Rudras, they need some associates. So the two wives gave birth to the two associates. Verse 19, Prajapati Angira had two wives, Swadha and Sati. The wife named Swadha accepted all the Pitas as her sons, and Sati accepted Atarvangira Saved as her son. Kishashva had two wives, Archis and Dishana, and the wife named Archis he begot Dhumaketu, and in Dishana he begot four sons, in Vedashira, Devala, Vayuna, and Manu. So if you heard today's Bhagavatam class, it's completely opposite of all these things here, just how the body is so horrible and how we shouldn't be attached and all that. Here, all these people are having children. Kashyap, of course, it's their service. Kashyap, now this is in a, Kashyap's the most important one here. So we're going to have pictures because they have very interesting children, Kashyap and his wives. Kashyap, who is also named Taksha, had four wives, Vinata, Suparna, Kaju, Patangi, and Jamani. Patangi gave birth to many kinds of birds, and Yamani gave birth to locusts. Locusts. You know what a locust is? In America, every 17 years, they have a plague of locusts. And there's locusts everywhere. On the roads, just covering the roads, covering the sidewalks. I was there in one such plague. I remember it, huh? I don't know, at least where I lived. I don't know if it's the whole America, but every 17 years. I remember it twice, actually. Once in my childhood, and once when I was older. They're just everywhere, and I remember going on the train, and you can't step on the sidewalk without stepping on them. They're just everywhere. It's like a plague. Like in the Bible, there's plagues. So anyway, they're kind of they're like this big, and they're round, and they make a horrible noise. They don't bite or anything, but they just cause a lot of trouble.
They eat fields of crops.
They eat the crops.
In 2 hours, they can devastate.
So they devastate the crops.
They land, all the people in the land eat it, and then go up and fly again together.
Wow. Yeah, they're always like swarms of bees. They are like, and they're very, they're like, look like a big grasshopper sort of, but round, kind of roundish. And it's a good thing they don't eat people, because they really come in swarms, you know, and you don't want to be there. I remember it twice in my life when I was living in America, and then I left America, so I didn't experience it again. But that was, yeah, I was only there twice. I was only there for 22 years. Huh? What color? Brown color? Yeah, it's like a grasshopper or cricket, but big size. Very big. Not green, brown. Brown. Yeah. Small grasshoppers. Or like cricket color. Cricket, but big size. Like big cockroach size. You know those big cockroaches? These are... Huh? Locust. Locust. Okay, let's go on from this topic of locust. Where are we? Okay, we're in verse 22. Haribo. Everybody listen. Vinata, Suparna gave birth to Garuda, the carrier of Lord Vishnu, and to Anuru, or Aruna, the chariot driver of the sun god. Kaju gave birth to different varieties of serpents. Okay, you can, here's Garuda here. You can flip it, and we'll see Kaju giving birth to the... Wait. Oh, yeah, see the locust? Yeah, I tried. It's kind of a cross between... It's that brown thing there. It's kind of like a... But he's more round. See, because she never saw a locust either. My daughter drew it, and I was trying to describe it to her, and then finally I just said, okay, just draw it like a grasshopper, kind of. But with big wings, big wings. And they're kind of round, like round shape. Okay, you can flip it. There's Garuda, and there we have the serpents from Kaju. And we know the story. I think I told it in one class already about Kaju and Vinata and their rivalry, the co-wives, and how Kaju and Vinata made a bet that this horse, I think, what's the name of the horse? I can't remember. Uchaishava. The horse Uchaishava had a black tail, Kaju said. Vinata said it's white. And then it actually was white, but Kaju told all her snake sons to go in the tail and make it black. So then the tail looked black, and so Vinata lost the bet. And so she had to be the slave of Kaju, she and her son Garuda. So Garuda had to carry the snakes everywhere. He was their slave, can you imagine? But then he got out of that they said, if you bring us nectar from heaven, then you can become free. So he brought the nectar from heaven, put it on kusha grass, and he told them, you go have your bath. And then while it was on the kusha mat, then Indra stole it back. They never got it. But they were licking up the kusha mat, and then their tongues became split, all the snakes. So then from that time on, the snakes became the food of Garuda after that. So here we have Garuda and verse 23, Maharaj Pariksha, best of the Bharatas. The constellations named Kritika were all wives of the moon god. However, because Prajapati Daksha had cursed him to suffer from a disease causing gradual destruction, the moon god could not beget children in any of his wives. Thereafter, the king of the moon pacified Prajapati Daksha with courteous words and thus regained the portions of light he had lost during his disease. Nevertheless, he could not beget children. The moon loses his shining power during the dark fortnight, and in the bright fortnight it is manifest again. O King Pariksit, now please hear for me the names of Kashyapa's wives, from whose wombs the population of the entire universe has come. They are the mothers of almost all the population of the entire universe, and their names are very auspicious to hear. So this is not according to Darwin at all. So Darwin has his own theory that it comes gradually, but here we have a different story here. But I was just reading somewhere, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was saying that Darwin had his theory, and Darwin's son had another theory after his father died. And Darwin's son, of course, it's not a very popular theory. His theory was that the moon came out from the ocean. So I wonder where he got that from. So here we go. Here's the wives of Kashyap. Aditi, Diti, Danu, Kashta, Arishta, Sarasa, Ila, Muni, Kodhavasha, Tamra, Surabhi, Sarama, and Timi. From the womb of Timi, all the aquatics took birth. Now, she did this backwards, so you have to flip over two pages. One and two. Yeah, okay, there you go. Now you've got Timi. There you've got the aquatics. There. Aquatics. And from the womb of Saramal, the ferocious animals like tigers and lions took birth. Just imagine if you had all these fish as your children. What would you do? Lions and tigers as your children. You think it's bad enough having the kids you have now. You got lions and tigers. How to keep them apart. Anyway, so she had lions and tigers. Verse 27. So actually, I forgot to mention that that Daksha cursed Soma also. Besides cursing Narada, he also cursed Soma. He's cursing a lot of people. He likes to curse. So anyway, that story, that's as far as we go in Bhagavatam. Yeah, the daughters complained because he was favoring Rohini. Okay, now you can flip it backwards for the next verse. 27, my dear King Parikshit, from the womb of Surabhi, the buffalo, cow, and other animals with cloven hooves took birth. From the womb of Tamra, the eagles, vultures, and other large birds of prey took birth. Yes, they were going backwards. And from the womb of Muni, the angels took birth. Apsaras, there she's up there. Apsaras. Sons of Krodha, Vasha, with the serpents known as Dandashuka, as well as other serpents and mosquitoes. So one mother has snakes and mosquitoes, both. You know why? Because they like to give trouble to people. Snakes and mosquitoes. And they both have little poison there. All the various creepers and trees were born from the womb of Ila. The Rakshasas, bad spirits, were born from the womb of Shirasa. So you know this, who these Dandashuka snakes are? Does anybody remember who they are? Yeah, you can turn it again. Backwards. Now we're going backwards. Anybody hear about these Dandashuka snakes somewhere? Do they ring a bell? No, that was a different one, Takshaka. He was a snake bird, not these kind of snakes. So actually they're mentioned in the 5th canto, 26th chapter in the Hellish Planet. And these snakes eat people who are always angry and giving pain to other living entities, envious people. They get eaten up by Dandashuka snakes who are born from Krodha Vasha. So, we're in verse 29. We don't have pictures of the Gandharvas. Gandharvas were born from the womb of Arishta. Animals whose hooves are not split, such as horses, were born from the womb of Kashta. And that's the end of our pictures. O King, from the womb of Danu came 61 sons, of whom these 18 were very important. Danu. Dvimurta, Shambhara. We've heard of Shambhara. He fought with Pradyumna. Arishtashura, Krishna got him. Hayagriva, Vibhavasu, Ayomukha, Shankushura, Sarvanu, Kapila, Aruna, Puloma, Vishparva, Ekachakra, Anutapana, Dhumrakesh, Virupaksha, Vipachiti, and Durjaya. Daughter of Sarvanu, named Suprabha, was married by Namuchi. The daughter of Vishparva, named Sharmishta, was given to powerful King Yayati, son of Nahusha. So we'll hear about that in 9th canto, verses 33-36. Vaishvanara, the son of Danu, had 4 beautiful daughters named Upadanavi, Hayashira, Paloma, and Kalika. Hiranyaksha married Upadanavi, and Kratu married Hayashira. Thereafter, at the request of Lord Brahma, Prajapati Kashyap married Paloma and Kalika, the other 2 daughters of Vaishvanara. From the wombs of these 2 wives of Kashyap came 60,000 sons, headed by Nivata Kavacha, who are known as Palomas and Kalakeas. They were physically very strong and expert in fighting, and their aim was to disturb the sacrifices performed by the great sages. My dear king, when your grandfather Arjuna went to the heavenly planets, he alone killed all these demons, and thus King Indra became extremely affectionate toward him. So this is mentioned in the 1st canto, 15th chapter, verse 13. Arjuna said, when I stayed for some days as a guest in the heavenly planets, all the heavenly demigods, including King Indradev, took shelter of my arms, which were marked with Gandivabo, to kill the demon named Nivata Kavacha. 1, 15, 13. So how is it that the demigods, they're more intelligent, they're more powerful and beautiful, but Arjuna was the one who had to kill the demons for them? Yes. He's by the grace of Krishna. And also it's mentioned, Prabhupada says his Gandiva bow was more was empowered by Krishna as well as Arjuna. So Prabhupada says, the Lord is all-powerful, and by his grace, his pure devotee can be as powerful as he may desire, and there is no limit. So that is Arjuna. Verse 37. You can flip it now. Let me see. 1, 2, 1. And again. Yeah, there we are. Kalaka, Kalakeus, Puloma. I think that's it. For now. Yeah. Okay. Not yet. Verse 37. In his wife Singhika, Viprachiti begot 101 sons, of whom the eldest is Rahu, the others are the 100 Ketus. All of them attain positions in influential planets. So anybody hear about the Rahu and Ketu? Sometimes you're in your Rahu period, and sometimes you're in your Ketu. So there's 100 Ketus, so I guess it's 100 times when you get into Ketu. Verse 39. Now please hear, as I describe the descendants of Aditi in chronological order. In this dynasty, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan descended by his plenary expansion. The names of the sons of Aditi are as follows. Vivasvan, Aryama, Pusha, Tashta, Savita, Bhagadhata, Vitata, Varana, Mitta, Shatu, and Ukrama. Now you can flip chart. We'll see the sons of Aditi here. And we're going to start with Vivasvan. So Vivasvan had two wives, you can see here, Sangya and Chaya. Verse 40, Sangya, the wife of Vivasvan, the sun god, gave birth to the Manu named Shadadev. And who is that Manu? Does anybody know who this Shadadev is? Yes, he's our Manu, Vivasvati Manu. Vivasvati. The same fortunate wife also gave birth to the twins, Yamaraj, in the river Yamuna. Then Yami, while wandering on the earth in the form of a mare, gave birth to the Ashwini Kumaras. Chaya, another wife of the sun god, begot two sons named Shanaishchar and Savarni Manu, and one daughter, Tapati, who married Samvarana. So who is this Shanaishchar? Anybody know? Saturn, yes. So the sun god is the father of Saturn. Verse 42, from the womb of Matrika, the wife of Aryama, were born many learned scholars. Among them, Lord Brahma created the human species, which are endowed with an aptitude for self-examination. So here we have Vivasvan, and then next is Aryama, Pusha, and Twashta. So in this chapter, we're only going to get through four of the sons of Aditi, and there will be a good reason why. And then after chapter 6, from verse chapter 7 up through chapter 17, we're going to hear about one, this Vishwarupa, the son of Twashta. Oh, there's another son of Twashta she forgot to put down there. Okay, anyway. So let's go read on here. Verse 43. Pusha had no sons. When Lord Shiva was angry at Daksha, Pusha had laughed at Lord Shiva and shown his teeth. Therefore, he lost his teeth and had to live by eating only ground flour. So I guess he didn't have children either. Maybe he didn't get married. Maybe nobody liked him after he lost his teeth. Vachana, the daughter of the Daityas, became the wife of Prajapati Twashta. By his samana, he begot in her womb two very powerful sons named Sannivesh and Vishwarup. So Sannivesh should be there. She didn't write it down. It should be Sannivesh and Vishwarup. And later on, Vritrasura will be born from Twashta. 44. Rachana, the daughter of the Daityas, became the wife of Prajapati Twashta. By his samana, he begot in her womb two very powerful sons named Sannivesh and Vishwarup. Although Vishwarupa was the son of the daughter of their eternal enemies, the demons, the demigods accepted him as their priest in accordance with the order of Brahma when they were abandoned by their spiritual master, Vihaspati, whom they had disrespected. And this is where the dynasty is going to stop for chapters 7 to 17. We won't hear about the rest of the sons until after these chapters. We'll hear also about the sons of Diti. So now we go to chapter 7, Maharaj Pariksit, inquire from Shukadeva Goswami. Yes, you have a question in chapter 6. Okay, why not?
Now, this is a obvious part of description.
I know, very far out. Did everybody follow that? No.
In between, it seems like God Brahma, he creates humans.
Yes, from the Matrikas. From the Matrikas, we got humans. From the womb of Matrika, wife of Varyama, were born many learned scholars. Among them, Lord Brahma created the human species. What's that?
Among them,
yes. He chose a few of them, and he created the human being, human species.
In text 12, it says, somebody creates the womb, somebody else, various cities.
Cities, yeah. So,
lust is born.
Lust, yeah. Lust is personified. All these qualities are personified. Lust, anger, fear.
How do we understand that?
Yeah, they're all personified. Cities are also personified. If you read Mahabharata, then there is a personification of a city is there to protect the city. Many times somebody will come and try and attack, and there will be the city personified protecting itself.
So on what level of, say, the structure of the universe, where is it taking place, all this?
This is in the heavenly planets, in the
Swarga,
or higher, wherever Kashyap lives. Where does Kashyap? Is he one of the seven sages? So it's on those planets there. Wherever Kashyap lives.
Seven rishis.
Is he one of the seven rishis? I think so. He's one of the seven. So it would be there.
Then how does he come into the Bhumanda from there?
That's their problem. It's not how they come down from up there.
I have an answer by Jhutakarma.
I mean, oh yes, what does Jhutakarma say? How did he come? At the end of each Manvantara.
And also partially at the end of Kali Yuga.
Yeah, devastation at the end of each Manu. Okay.
And then there's repopulation starting at high levels up to Yuga level.
Yes. So there's repopulation. So this very high, it's up on the Saptarishi.
He shows it on a video type. Which is that they come in Vimana.
They come in airplanes.
Yeah,
Vimana.
The population of the seeds of all this.
All the seeds come. Quite possible. Okay, so by airplane they may come down from the higher planets to the Bhumandala.
UFO.
So any next time you see a UFO, it could be populating the universe. Or they don't need airplanes from down. He has airplanes too. Okay. All right. Next question. Yes.
It's nice to remember here the first chapter of the fourth canto.
First chapter of fourth canto.
The dynasty of Swamikumar and Shatarupa. It spoke about the daughters of Daksha.
Yes, he had a first set of daughters
in Swamikumar. 13 daughters to Dharma.
Again, 13 daughters. Dynasty of Adharma. Yes. All the bad qualities. So one who hears the dynasty of Dharma and Adharma, he's freed from all sinful reactions. Right. So now we're getting the question. Okay, well, you can take up that research. And yes? Okay? Okay. In Skanda Purana, it's described that when Kashyap wanted to give birth to lions, he became a lion. His wife became a lion. Okay? That would make it more logical.
Yeah. It's in a level where they can hide.
That's true. They can change their forms. So it's quite possible they were changing their forms to give birth to these different species. So that references Skanda Purana. So if you want to understand it better, then you can look at it in that way, that they took the forms, different forms, and gave birth. Yes, Pachi. Yeah, he shot an arrow at a rishi who was in a deer form, yes? His wife. Then he got cursed. Yeah, the rishis could do it. So he was a rishi, Kashyap. Rishis and their wives could do it. So this Kashyap was one of the Maharishis, one of the Sapta rishis. So obviously he could change his form. Okay, so that's quite interesting. Okay, last question, and then we have to do chapter 7.
Mosquitoes.
So did she become a mosquito, and did he become a mosquito?
Now the question is,
yes. Okay, very small bacteria are there?
They are everywhere. So mm-hmm. I wanted to see, would you know any reference
about reference about the bacteria?
Yeah.
No, I don't know. Yes, actually, there's Indragopa.
Yeah, Indragopa.
Indragopa. How big is that? Does anybody know how big is Indragopa? Indragopa. There's Indra and Indragopa. So the Indragopa is supposed to be like a microbe. Yeah, category of bacteria and microbe. Indragopa is supposed to be very, very small. Very small thing. That was the last one. Now we're going to go on to chapter 7. Hold your questions until the end of class. So we got to get through these verses here today, or else Burijan is going to have trouble this afternoon. Verse 1 in chapter 7. Maharaj Parikshit inquired from Shukadeva Goswami, O great sage, why did the spiritual master of the demigods, Brihaspati, reject the demigods who were his own disciples? What offense did the demigods commit against their spiritual master? Please describe to me this incident. So we'll read Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's comment. Saptame guru natyakta divadatya parajita visharupa gurutena kata brahma padeshita. The seventh chapter describes how Brihaspati was offended by the demigods, how he left them, and the demigods were defeated, how the demigods, following instructions of Lord Brahma, accepted Vishwarupa as the priest to perform their sacrifice. So chapter 6 was like a transition between the Daksha Lila, and now the Vritashura Lila is starting to come. This is the beginning, yes. Yes, just the verse before, he mentioned that.
Yeah.
The last verse in sixth chapter, Shukadev mentioned that the demigods were rejected by their spiritual masters, so they had to accept Vishwarupa. So now Parikshit is asking, it's continuation there. So he's interrupting the dynasty of Aditi, to find out the story. He's very curious about the story. Shukadeva was narrating the dynasty, and he will continue in chapter 18, narrating this whole dynasty, Savita Bhaga and all these others. But for now, he's stopping with Tvashta because of the question of Maharaj Parikshit. Why, you know, what happened? Why did Brihaspati reject his disciples, the demigods? So here's the story. Verse 2, Shukadeva Goswami said, O king, once upon a time, the king of heaven, Indra, being extremely proud because of his great opulence of the three worlds, transgressed the law of Vedic etiquette. Seated on his throne, he was surrounded by the Maruts, Vasus, Rudras, Adityas, Ribhus, Vishvadevas, Sadhyas, Ashini Kumaras, Siddhas, Charanas, Gandharvas, and great saintly persons. Also surrounding him were the Vidyadharas, Apsaras, Kinnaras, Patagas, birds, and Urugas, snakes. All of them were offering Indra their respects and services, and the Apsaras and Gandharvas were dancing and singing with very sweet musical instruments. Over Indra's head was a white umbrella as effulgent as the full moon. Fanned by yak-tail whisks and served with all the paraphernalia of a great king, Indra was sitting with his wife Suchi Devi, who occupied half the throne, when the great sage Brihaspati appeared in that assembly. Brihaspati, the best of the sages, was a spiritual master of Indra and the demigods, and was respected by the demigods and demons alike. Nevertheless, although Indra saw his spiritual master before him, he did not rise from his own seat or offer a seat to his spiritual master, nor did Indra offer him a respectful welcome. Indra did nothing to show him respect. This is very dangerous. Remember what happened to the last person who didn't show respect to Lord Balaram? Yes, he was killed with a blade of grass. Now, Indra was not killed. Brihaspati did something else because he was a great sage. Brihaspati knew everything that would happen in the future. Seeing Indra's transgression of etiquette, he completely understood that Indra was puffed up by his material opulence. Although able to curse Indra, he did not do so, not like Daksha. Instead, he left the assembly and in silence returned to his home. So when a brahmana is upset, he doesn't say anything. So his servant described, when Prabhupada was the most angry, he wouldn't say anything, but his lip would just start quivering. And that meant he was really angry. Really angry. If he was not so angry, he'd start shouting and chastise. But if he was really angry, then he would just not say anything. Like that happened when he was in an accident in South Africa. The accident that he knew was coming, and he braced himself, Mauritius. And he didn't say anything, not a word. His lip was quivering. Anyway, so this is what Brahmins do when they're angry. If they're really angry, they could also curse. But he didn't do anything, he just left. Indra, the king of heaven, could immediately understand his mistake. Realizing he had disrespected his spiritual master, he condemned himself in the presence of all the members of the assembly. Alas, what a regrettable deed I have committed. Because of my lack of intelligence and my pride and my material opulences, I failed to show respect to my spiritual master when he entered this assembly, and thus I have insulted him. Although I am king of the demigods who are situated in the mode of goodness, I was proud of a little opulence and polluted by false ego. Under these circumstances, who in this world would accept such riches at the risk of falling down? Alas, I condemn my wealth and opulence. So Prabhupada's purport, Lord Chaitanya prayed, Natanam Najanam Nasundaring Kaviram Vajikadishikamaye. My Lord, I do not aspire for material opulence or wealth, nor do I want a great number of followers to accept me as their leader, nor do I want a very beautiful wife to please me. Mama Janmane Janmane Share Bhavatar Bhaktirahi Tukitwe. I do not even want liberation. All I want, life after life, is to be a faithful servant of your Lordship. According to the laws of nature, when one is extremely opulent, one becomes degraded, and this is true both individually and collectively. Demigods are situated in a mode of goodness. Sometimes even one who is situated in such an exalted position as King Indra, king of all the demigods, falls down because of material opulence. We are now actually seeing this in America. The entire American nation has tried to advance in material opulence without striving to produce ideal human beings. The result is Americans are now regretting the wholesale criminality of American society and are wondering how America has become so lawless and unmanageable. So Prabhupada must have been writing this when he was in Chicago. He was confronted with a newspaper article, Crime, Why and What to Do. So there is this huge article in the paper, and Prabhupada contacted the police department in Chicago and told them that he had the solution for crime. So they sent over one of their officers, Lieutenant Mosey, and he had a discussion with Srila Prabhupada on how to prevent crime. So the lieutenant said, I understand you have some ideas that could help us in our efforts to prevent crime. I'd be very interested to hear them. So then Prabhupada says, the difference between a pious man and a criminal is one is pure in heart and the other is dirty. And this dirt is like a disease in the form of lust and greed. So everyone is in this disease condition and crime is very widespread. So we have to purify these dirty things and crime will disappear. So what was Prabhupada's idea? What were his ideas for the police department? Yes.
They should support the Krishna conscious movement.
Yes. In which way?
Provide facilities.
Yes. And what did he recommend for them to do with the criminals, and what should they do? Prasadam distribution and
kirtan.
Yes, sankirtan. He says the simplest process is to have assemble in congregation and chant the holy names of God. So if you want to stop crime, then you get as many people as possible together and do mass sankirtan. That was his idea. So then he said, well, what about in your country, in India, is it the same? What is your definition? So Prabhupada said, what is your definition of crime? So the lieutenant said, any trampling on the rights of one person by another. Prabhupada says, yes, our definition is the same. And Prabhupada quoted from one book. What's that? Yes, exactly. Ishavasham Idam Sarvam. Ishupanishad, Mantra 1. Everything belongs to God. So then he started chastising lieutenant. He says, everything is God's property. And you may not encroach upon others, whatever is allotted to a person. So actually the first crime is you Americans are thinking this land of America is yours. So that's the first crime. 200 years ago, it was not yours, and you've come and claimed it as your land. Actually, it is God's land. So it belongs to everyone because everyone is a child of God. So then he said that he brought up the slogan, and if you look on the American dollar, it says, "In God we trust." So your government has this slogan? The lieutenant said, yes. He said, well, where is the education about God? To trust is good, but trust is not enough. You have to give education about God. So anyway, so then again at the end, the lieutenant tried again. So you say we should have a return to religious principles. So what advice can you give us to assist us in reducing crime? And Prabhupada said again, chant Hare Krishna. You must come together and chant. So that was Prabhupada's idea, how to reduce crime. And here I have an example of how it actually works. This is from a criminal, two criminals, one criminal. This is from the prison ministry, ISKCON, in America. They preach to the prisoners in the prisons. This one says, chanting had become a very important part of my day. To serve our blessed Lord Krishna is my deep longing. And I eat up everything I can get my hands on by His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. He's giving me life through His writings. He has slowly become my loving teacher. Even though His divine grace has passed on, I feel He is with me all through the day. Every time I face something, His words speak to me. My love for Him keeps growing deeper. So chanting seems to work. There's another criminal here. One of them, I was interested. He says, I've been a student of theology for many years. I wonder why he's in prison. A student of theology for many years. So what's he doing in prison? That was another one. I guess that's what he's been doing in prison. And here's another one. I'm still chanting like crazy and enjoying it greatly. I don't know why Krishna gives me so much joy since I'm so fallen. I'm very thankful to him for all the little things he gives me. Blue sky, green grass to sit on while I chant in the daytime. Most of all, wonderful people to write to. The other prisoners say I'm lucky because I'm happy, and when I tell them why, they don't believe me, not having sex, coffee, or smoking, and they turn away. So they see he's happy, but then when he tells them how, he said, I started a new thing. There's a table in the lobby of my building. When men move or go home, they leave their books. So I got Prabhupada's books and put them on the table with my name and cell number on them. When a man gets them, I tell him what a nice book it is, and when he's done, please return it. I have three men I've talked to who are waiting for the Bhagavad Gita. And so anyway, this is prison preaching, yes?
It's a little story on the Rupa Manjari
in Radhadesh.
She's doing prison preaching.
Oh, she's doing prison preaching.
And one day she got a phone call.
She got a phone call. Right.
And
I'm calling you from prison. I'm a criminal. She said, yes, I'm also a criminal. He said, yes, but I'm a real... I've done heavy crimes. I'm a real criminal. She said, I'm also a criminal. Right. She sent him Bhagavad Gita. He started calling regularly.
And he would read the newspaper.
He would read the newspaper. Oh, he would read the paper and think, oh, this person might like to read Bhagavad Gita.
And he would order Rupa Manjari a Bhagavad Gita.
He would order one from Rupa Manjari.
Yeah. And ask her to send his Bhagavad Gita.
And send it to that person.
And yogurt.
He would make yogurt.
And offer it.
And he would distribute the yogurt to all the prisoners. So he was doing prasad distribution in prison as a prisoner. Yeah, so that's nice, yes. So you see it actually works. So Prabhupada is talking about how the Americans, they have this problem, and the solution is very simple. Verse 13. Yes. So this Rupa Manjari is a very saintly person. Yes, actually we're all criminals, but none of us, we think we're here by mistake. You know, yes, Patri. That's how the criminals think, you know. Oh, it's they just did this. It's a mistake somehow I'm here. Patri.
I also
used to visit the jails.
And it was very
Right. He went to a jail.
Main officer of
the jail. Main
officer? Major. Yeah. So
he became Hare Krishna devotee?
16
realms.
Heavy
jail, major security. Yeah, so Delhi jail is nothing compared to that. That's in Russia.
Yeah. Oh.
Heavy. So he gave green light to the devotees who come every week and preach to my criminals. It was a secret jail. So they didn't believe. Oh, heavy security. So they didn't know how you're going in that jail. Yeah, so heavy security, checking all you. So all you had was cartels when you went in. You had 10, 15 Pakka devotees in the jail. And they gave a big room, like a temple room. They made their own altar, carved it. Dhoti, they made dhotis out of their bed sheets.
After 1 year, we have already Bhakta, new Bhakta Brahmachari
room. You had a Brahmachari room?
Yes, and all the devotees are chanting. And
they're chanting.
Offering everything because this major of jail is supporting them because he's also a devotee.
Oh, the major is also a devotee, right.
And finally, they decided because they're working all the time in the jail. Something
yeah, they're doing some work. They wanted to make a really nice altar.
And he engaged all his jail people. You know,
so he took all the prisoners to make the altar, the temple.
Some of them, they came out, they are wonderful artists, they are wonderful, you know, carpenters.
Right. Very good artists and carpenters.
And they came as devotees.
They came out as devotees from the jail. So hopefully we will also come out as devotees from the jail. Yes, that is our hope. Out as devotees. Very nice. Verse 13. If a person says, we're back to Indra now, after a slight break. One who is situated on the exalted throne of a king should not, if a person says, one who is situated on the exalted throne of a king should not stand up to show respect to another king or a Brahmin, it is to be understood he does not know the superior religious principle. So, who can he not neglect? He doesn't have to stand up for everyone, but who must this person not neglect? Who is a king? If there's a king on his throne, yes. Another king? And a Brahmin. Okay, especially a Brahmin. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, when a president or king is on his throne, he does not need to show respect to everyone who comes, but he must show respect to superiors, like his spiritual master, Brahmins and Vaishnavas. There are many examples of how he should act. So examples are given by Prabhupada. Lord Krishna himself, he was on the throne. He got off for Sudama Vipra. He got off for Narada Muni to worship them. So at the end of the purport, Prabhupada condemns American civilization. A civilization in which the people do not know how the representative of Narada and Krishna should be respected, how society should be formed, and how one should advance in Krishna consciousness. A society concerned only with manufacturing new cars and new skyscrapers every year and breaking them to pieces and making new ones may be technologically advanced, but it is not a human civilization. A human civilization is advanced when its people follow Chaturvanya's system of four orders of life. So Prabhupada is saying that the American society was not human civilization. Verse 14, here's a description of modern leaders. Leaders who have fallen into ignorance and who mislead people by directing them to the path of destruction as described in the previous verse are in effect boarding a stone boat, and so too are those who blindly follow them. A stone boat would be unable to float and would sink in the water with its passengers. Similarly, those who mislead people go to hell and their followers go with them. Near the end of the purport, Prabhupada says, unfortunately, although the American people are extremely eager to get out of materialistic chaos, they are sometimes found to patronize the makers of stone boats. That will not help them. They must take the proper boat offered by Krishna in the form of the Krishna consciousness movement. So what are some examples of stone boats that American people are patronizing? What are these stone boats that sink in the ocean. Actually, there's one scientist, yes. Today's class was something about scientists as well. The scientists, they make stone boats. Who else makes, yes? You don't agree. You agree.
On what?
On the scientists making stone boats.
Oh, going to the moon.
Yes, going to the moon. Yes, that's what he was talking about. It was Dina Bandhu giving class today.
Bush approved the budget of $1 billion.
$1 billion.
For the next
moon landing project. Yeah, and Dina Bandhu was talking about in class today how it used to cost, 20 years ago, it used to cost $250,000 to make the toilet that would work in weightless atmosphere, a weightless toilet. He says now it must cost about $1 million just for the toilet. So just imagine how they're spending their money.
Yeah, but his point was that when you're out there, what are you going to do?
Yes, right. When you're out there, also.
Pass,
just to pass urine up in outer space, you have to pay $1 million. And Prabhupada makes a very... Prabhupada makes a really interesting comment. He says about how, you know, what's the use of going there? He says, we do not go even to pass urine there. To the moon. This Prabhupada, he puts them down, like, really. He knows how to put someone down. That's why they didn't like. Yeah, he says, you get these pictures of Mars, and you get the pictures... But the pictures are so bad, who would want to go there? Who would want to go and live there or even visit? It's not what's there to go and see and do. Not very interesting, the way they portray, the way the scientists portray it. Any other stone boats? Besides, yes, the scientist is really a stone boat. Yes, what else? Bhagavat. The schools. The schools, you start sinking right from a young age. You go into school and that's, Prabhupada says, what does Prabhupada call the schools? Slaughterhouses. Why is it a slaughterhouse? Yes. Yes, he's killing the soul, soul killing. No spiritual values, killing the intelligence, killing the soul. This is a modern education, like a, what is that, in Isha Upanishad, there is an analogy, modern education. Cobra's jewel, jewel on the head of a cobra, or decoration of a dead body. There's another analogy we're going to hear day after tomorrow about, it's very similar to the stone boat. You're trying to cross the ocean, and you take a stone boat. So you're trying to cross the ocean, and... you catch the tail of a dog. So that's what it's like to take shelter of science, philosophy, modern education. You're catching the tail of a dog trying to cross the ocean. And also Prabhupada says, you have this beautiful boat, the human body. But the scientists, instead of using it for its proper purposes, they study the body, scrutinize the body. What is it made of? Like today we heard such a description of in class, blood, pus, urine, all these things. You just 2 millimeters below the skin are all these wonderful things that are composing the body. But actually, it's a very nice boat. Devotee sees even these horrible things, he sees as wonderful in the service of Krishna. Yes, Sankirtan.
The Prabhupada has two more examples here in the book of stone boats.
Stone boats. Okay, give it to us.
One is the meditators.
The meditators.
Unauthorized
meditation is a stone boat, and?
And the other is the society guided by political diplomacy.
Politics,
one
political diplomacy.
Against another,
right.
Like a stone boat.
So the politicians, they are stone boats. All the politicians who promise so many things, they are like giving us stone boats to go on. Yoga system, gymnastic methods of yoga, unauthorized meditation, these are stone boats. So beware, next time you see one of these stone boats coming, don't get in one of these stone boats. Now we know about these stone boats. Bhagavatam is teaching us everything, and Prabhupada is giving us very specific examples of stone boats. So next time you see one of these, don't go. King Indra said, 15, therefore with great frankness and without duplicity, I shall now bow my head at the lotus feet of Brihaspati, spiritual master of the demigods. Because he is an emotive goodness, he is fully aware of all knowledge and is the best of the Brahmins. Now I shall touch his lotus feet and offer my obeisances unto him to try to satisfy him. Purport, coming to his senses, King Indra realized he was not a very sincere disciple of his spiritual master, Brihaspati. Therefore, he decided that henceforth he would be Nishata non-duplicitous. Nishata Shishnata Charanam Spishan. He decided to touch his head to the feet of his spiritual master. From this example, we should learn this principle, enunciated by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Yasya Pashara, Bhagavad Pashara, Yasya Pashara, Nagati Toki. So, before the quote, Prabhupada says, familiarity sometimes breeds contempt, but one should be very careful in one's dealings with the Acharya. Agada Dishnam Dvijam. Acharya is a perfect Brahman and has unlimited intelligence in guiding the activities of his disciple. Does anybody here get too familiar with their guru and get in trouble? No, very good. You're all good disciples. But there is one of Prabhupada's disciples who did get in trouble. So I'm going to tell you the story. I told it to you, I think, in brief one time, but this is the actual story. His name is Vamana Jana. He said he was asked with his good friend Bhaskara to be a bodyguard of Srila Prabhupada. And they were having lunch together, he and his friend, and they said, "Did you notice Srila Prabhupada does the same thing at the same time every day?" I said, "Yeah, it's amazing. You can almost set your watch by him." And Bhaskara said, "Someone gave him a brand new pair of slippers the other day. He only wears them from his room to the curtains outside the temple room. Then he takes them off. After class, he puts them on, wears them to go upstairs, and takes them off at his door." I said, "Yeah?" He said, "They're new. And I looked at them last night and got the model number and manufacturer's name and bought another pair exactly like them." I said, "Well, what are you going to do? His feet are not the same size as your feet." Bhaskara said, "Tomorrow morning, when he goes down for class, I'm going to exchange them for my slippers. And he'll wear my slippers back upstairs. Then I will exchange them again, and I'll have a pair of slippers that Srila Prabhupada wore. He will have only worn them one time, but Srila Prabhupada will have worn my slippers." I thought, "Wow, that's a good idea. Tomorrow I'm going to go out and buy a pair of slippers and do the same thing next day." So the next day we got together at lunch. I said, "Did you get your slippers?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Where do I buy mine?" He said, "Don't do it." I thought, "Yeah, you got your slippers." He said, "Let me tell you what happened. Srila Prabhupada put his slippers on in the morning, came downstairs, took them off by the curtain, and I exchanged them. After class, he came out, put on my slippers, wore them upstairs, right into his room." "He never took them off at the door." I said, "Really? What did you do?" He said, "I stood there chanting japa thinking, what am I going to do now? I was there about 5 minutes when a sannyasi came and asked, 'Is your name Bhaskara?' 'Yes.' Sannyasi said, 'Srila Prabhupada has a message for you. He thanks you very much for the new slippers. You may keep the old slippers, but most importantly, he said, it's not nice to play tricks on the spiritual master.'" Sometimes devotees would do stuff. Another thing I remember was his servant, Shutakirti. One time Prabhupada had an old Brahmin thread, and Prabhupada said to Shutakirti, "Okay, you take this Brahmin thread and you break it into pieces, you tear it apart and put it down underneath the tulsi plant." So he was thinking, I want this Maha Brahmin thread from Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada told him, "No, you have to destroy it." So he thought, "No, I want this Brahmin thread." So Prabhupada gave him the Brahmin thread, and he didn't bury it under the tulsi plant. And then Prabhupada asked him, "Where is the Brahmin thread? Did you put it under the tulsi plant?" But he couldn't lie. And Prabhupada said, "No, I want, do something with that Brahmin thread. You can't have it." So anyway, servants would sometimes try to do things, but Prabhupada knew better. So not to be familiar with your spiritual master. And that's what happened to Indra, and see what happened to Indra after. And he's thinking, "Okay, I'm going to go, and no problem. I'm going to go offer obeisances and everything's going to be all right." But no, his guru is smarter than him. Verse 16, "While Indra, the king of the demigods, thought in this way and repented in his own assembly, Brihaspati, the most powerful spiritual master, understood his mind. Thus he became invisible to Indra and left home, for Brihaspati was spiritually more powerful than King Indra." So he disappeared. Although Indra searched vigorously with the assistance of the other demigods, he could not find Brihaspati. Then Indra thought, alas, my spiritual master has become dissatisfied with me, and now I have no means of achieving good fortune. Although he was surrounded by demigods, he could not find peace of mind. And guess who found out about this? The demons. Hearing of the pitiable condition of King Indra, the demons, following the instructions of their guru, Shukracharya, equipped themselves with weapons and declared war against the demigods. So you see, the war is not simply fighting with bows and arrows, but you know, it's your guru against their guru. It's a war against the gurus, actually. So now Indra lost his guru, so now he's going to lose the battle. Verse 19, the demigods' heads, thighs, and arms, and other parts of their bodies were injured by the sharp arrows of the demons. The demigods, headed by Indra, saw no other course than to immediately approach Lord Brahma with bowed heads for shelter and proper instruction. When the most powerful Lord Brahma saw the demigods coming toward him, their bodies gravely injured by the arrows of the demons, he pacified them by his great causeless mercy and spoke as follows. So now people think, no, it's just we have our bombs, you have your bombs. But actually, it's the gurus that give the power for victory to the demigods and to the demons. So now the demigods lost their guru, now the demons, they got victory because they're following Shukracharya. So now the demigods are going to have to find another guru. So they don't know what to do, they're going to Lord Brahma. So we'll stop here. Any questions? We can continue. Yes?
It was mentioned that they were wounded.
Yeah, they were wounded, yes.
All of them came to see Vishnu, but
Brahma.
But I never heard, maybe there are stories, but I never heard how they get killed. Do they ever die in the battle?
Do they ever die? In the eighth canto, I think when they were carrying that big mountain, and then some of them die. No, actually the demons. Yeah, the demons got revived. Yeah, I don't know about the demigods dying. Anybody know a story where the demigods die? Usually they don't. They just get injured. They get injured. Huh? Yeah, because they have Amrita. Yeah, they drink Amrita, so they don't die. They're Amara. Amara. They don't seem to die. But they get injured. They don't have a happy life. They may be eternal. I mean, they maybe have a long life, but that doesn't mean they have a healthy life because they get in fights with the demons all the time. This is the problem. Yes. If he is bona fide, yes, so far. He's bona fide now, so he has power. Anyway, he's a Brahmin. Brahmins have power. He's a Brahmin. Well, he's not such a good devotee, as far as I understand. He's a mixed devotee. Yes. Among the Kavis, I am Shukracharya. Yes. Sankirtan? He's in the line. Yeah, he's a devotee, but he's not a pure devotee. He's mixed. He's a devotee sometimes. Sometimes, like when Vamana Dev came, he wasn't a devotee. He wasn't good. Oh, Vibhuti. He's a Vibhuti, yes. And he's in a line. I forget who's the father of Shukracharya. He's one of the sons of one of those great rishis, Shukracharyas. He's a son. You can look in your chart there. Shukracharya. He's worshipping Vishnu. Worshipping Vishnu as well. Yeah. Because he taught Bali Maharaj to worship Vishnu. But actually, his disciples were not instructing Prahlad like that. Sanda and Amarka, they were just emphasizing the materialistic aspect. They didn't give any spiritual knowledge to Prahlad, for sure. Because when Hiranyakashipu, he called the sons of Shukracharya, he said, who's teaching us? He said, we're not teaching. So, obviously, he's... You know, there's some mixture there. Family guru. He's also Shukracharya means by semen, so seminal line. Family guru. He's a family guru. He's not on a high level because he was worried about his maintenance, and that's why he told Bali Maharaj not to worship Lord Vishnu because he thought his maintenance would stop. Yes, Gurusev Nanda. Adhyatmika. Are you both Adhidaivik, Adhyatmika?
The first two, Adhyatmika and Adhidaivika, they are Jiva.
Adhyatmika and Adhidaivika are Jiva.
And then Adhibhautika is not conscious, it's just the material body. Which
material body.
The Adhyatmika from the demigods from the other who are embodied living beings.
Gotcha. That differentiates the demigods and the
Adhyatma.
Okay, the differentiation.
The body is manifested, there is no,
yes.
Because they are controlling our body.
They're controlling our body.
But do they have their own body also?
Who?
The demigods, a different kind of body because they are the gods there.
The demigods have, of course, they have bodies.
So, and who controls their bodies?
Who controls the demigods' bodies? Super soul? Yes. And Lord Brahma also. Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu. Yes. Yes, so there's Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. Also, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. They're the three big controllers over the other demigods. And that's why, I mean, the example is right here. These demigods don't know what to do, they go to Brahma. Pachi, did you have your hand up? No. You had your hand up? No. Well, okay, Prashanta, do you have an answer for that? Adhibhautika, Purusha. My understanding was not simply, not only our body, but all the bodies.
Yeah, the
because they give you trouble. The other bodies also give you trouble. Adhyatmik is your own, and then Adhibhautik is everyone else. Everyone else. All other living, yes.
I heard that Adhyatmika means your mind. And
your mind.
You yourself.
Yes.
And then Adhibhautika, other Buddhas.
Other Buddhas, yes. That was my understanding. Other Buddhas is Adhibhautik. Other Buddhas. Yeah, that's a different perspective, different angle of looking at it. So that's another, you can look at it from that angle, or you can look at it at the angle of who's giving you the trouble. And that's the other living entities, or the demigods, or your own mind. Yes. Kshetra and Kshetragya.
For instance, Lord Brahma is the Kshetra of the whole universe.
Right. Lord Brahma is the... His Kshetra is the whole universe. That's his body. His body is like the universal.
He has a subtle body.
Right.
That's his body.
Right.
That's what he said. He said, Lord Brahma, so he's
body. Right. So, just, so this is one way to understand it, is that we have our body, and in our body there's many cells and many living entities, but we're like the leader of the body. So in the universal body, there is many living entities, but Lord Brahma is like the leader, and Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is the super soul. Okay, any other questions? Well, you don't know. From your perspective, you wouldn't know if he's moving the whole universe when he moves. Yeah, I thought that was quite interesting too. That he, Lord, long, long ago, Indra regretted his disrespect, so the American nation should regret.
Yes. American people regret their mistaken advancement in civilization.
Right. They should regret their mistaken advancement in civilization, American civilization.
Now, just in the last comment.
Oh, yes.
Katrina, and that was another one.
Right.
And it's like, and they go there, big shot, they push, and so yeah, we're going to say it's $200 billion investment, we're going to fix it, the next is already waiting, the next slide.
Right. So now it's getting out of hand. They cannot control the hurricanes. Yes, if you don't change, then we'll send more hurricanes. Yes. Patri.
It's actually quite amazing. You can see Prabhupada is Krishna's representative.
Yes, Prabhupada is Krishna's representative.
And he actually is so bold and
yes.
Challenges civilization.
Yeah, he's challenging the whole American government, can you imagine? And he's living there. And he's saying like he's the guru of the Americans, and he's like chastising them. Now you should regret, you should repent. You're mistaken. So and yes, yes. You don't see any sadhu standing up to the government, and but Prabhupada, he did. They're trying to make compromise. Yes, so they can get flatter. Yes, but Prabhupada, he did not compromise. He would preach heavily to everyone he met. Yes. He preached to the Indians also. He was very heavy with the Indian governors and representatives. He preached to Indira Gandhi also. I don't know exactly what he said to her. But I heard that she was just she couldn't even hear Prabhupada because she was in so much fear for her life. She knew that they were going to kill her, and so she couldn't hear Prabhupada's words. But then after he spoke to her, then we, from that time, we were able to get extensions on our visas in India. And before that time, we were getting kicked out every 6 months. Yeah. Now it's also getting that way a little bit more. Dhammakrishna? So how should we preach to the government people? What should be our approach? Should you try to compromise, or should you just tell them the real facts, or how should you preach? Has anyone done government preaching here? Anyone? You have. Which government?
Taiwan.
You preached?
It depends the situation. When they are very proud, then they don't even propose.
Yeah, I know, because in Africa, Nigeria, one of my god sisters, she was preaching to the guy. He was just killing so many people, and she said, this is not good. So then he killed all the devotees, including her. And she said that to him. So you can risk your life in some countries if you preach.
If they will kind of
be
loaded,
yeah.
Like, now the Amazon goes to Sri Lanka.
Oh, he goes to Sri Lanka.
After the tsunami.
Right.
Could
yes, he went there, and then the general, they were ready to give ISKCON all help, troops. Yes.
Then you do something for them, and then you also.
Yeah, and then he preaches, and it's good. Yes. So when government is in difficulty, then they look.
If we can preach, not in a charitable way, but to show people that this is the solution.
Yes.
So government will come usually and request for their help.
I think Bhakti Chitra Maharaj was preaching to many African leaders in Africa. And I think especially Nelson Mandela, who even came to the temple, took prasadam, took the books, and they were consulting. In fact, I read one of his books, and it said that they asked him to be their prime minister, one of the people there, but he refused, of course. Yes?
And in Nepal, for example, now they have this Maoist terrorists.
Yeah, they have this terrorist from China.
And they want actually to kick out the king, and they fire.
Yeah, they want to get the king out. Okay, so they asked the devotees at a meeting of the Vishwa Hindu Parishad to... Oh, he's co-president of Vishwa Hindu Parishad. Oh, the king is in charge. Yes, Hindu government. So you were giving seminars in Nepal.
Karma.
And journalists were there, and the president.
They came in between during my presentation.
Right.
And
it went before the end.
Because they heard the newspapers that this is going on, something going on.
So they came in a little bit, and then they went at before the end.
And when they came out, they're so busy they left. But the journalists, they remained.
No, the journalists stayed.
Yeah.
The politicians came and left.
Yes, but then when everything finished, so they came to me and they asked me, do you know who this guy was?
They asked you, do you know who that guy was? You
no,
said, no, I don't know.
So this is so like
yes.
So this philosophy will solve our situation.
So he said, we need 20 people like this. This will solve our problems in our country of Nepal.
Such kind of philosophy, actually, which can solve all the problems.
Right. So the problem, yes. So we have to be ready. We have to be ready when the governments come asking us for advice. What advice we shall give. Yes. Okay, let's next one, Lilashuka. So first you have to cultivate the ground. Belgium.
That we are considered as a very dangerous sect.
In Belgium, you're considered a dangerous sect.
That's
very nice.
One step.
First step is to get recognized with all the religions.
And we did all
more difficult.
It's uniting all the Hindus.
Uniting all the, it's more difficult than uniting the religions, it's uniting all the Hindus.
It means the Sikhs, the Jains.
Sikhs, the Jains, right.
And that's the way.
So this is the way to get to the government. Okay, first you have to get recognized as a proper religion.
So this preaching is very slow.
Yeah.
It's on a high level.
I think in London also, in that fight to save the manor, then they met many influential people. They got one of the people in Parliament. And now this year, or last year was it, they celebrated Janamashtami in the Parliament itself in England. They celebrated Janamashtami. And they had prasadam, vegetarian prasadam. Yes. Yeah, I think also with Russia, when I was in India when Russia was not free. So they had us sending letters to Gorbachev and also asking the Indian people to send, especially. We had to get Indian people to send letters to Gorbachev saying that this is proper religion.
Ours.
Yes, to convince Gorbachev. Okay, next question, yeah. Spiritual master. Indra became familiar with his spiritual master. His spiritual master was, yeah, he was coming every day. Yeah, his guru was coming every day. In our own society. Oh, yes, yes. Those who personally serve the spiritual master. How to avoid becoming familiar. Well, Prabhupada talked about that. He had one, Pradyumna. Pradyumna was Prabhupada's Sanskrit scholar. So Pradyumna had to go in practically every hour, twice in an hour, to ask Prabhupada questions on the Sanskrit and different things. So he would go in the room and he would offer his obeisances and he would say something, then he would offer his obeisances and then go out. So sometimes he was getting really fast at it, you know. He would just hit the ground and then get up and then hit the ground and he would become really fast. And Prabhupada made a comment. He says, I don't like this hatchet obeisances, like an axe coming down. He says, no, you have to say the full thing, because otherwise you'll become familiar. And so with Prabhupada anyway, he wanted everyone to offer, every time you see your spiritual master, every time you go away from your spiritual master, then you have to offer obeisances. That was what he had as his standard. But in front of the deities, we should not offer obeisances. As far as I remember, we didn't offer obeisances in front of the deities. Yes, except during Guru Puja time. Guru Puja, we did have Guru Puja in front of the deities, yes. Oh, just once in a day.
How much time we lose, and otherwise I just keep in mind.
So you were calculating how much time you would lose offering obeisances the whole day every time you saw him. So just when you wake up and go to sleep. So you didn't offer obeisance every time. Yes, you were a servant of your spiritual master. Give you special mercy.
Yeah, then he'll share his realizations with me.
So your other disciples, they thought if you became friends with your spiritual master, he'll share his realizations,
yes,
and
so
other things.
Actually, my Guru Maharaj told me that following instructions.
Yeah, so the more you have the awe and reverence, and the more serious you will be in following the instructions.
The more people benefit from association with spiritual master.
Right.
So we should not actually try to become equal to him.
And we shouldn't try to become equal. There is also, now I remember the opposite time. One time, one devotee was offering obeisances too many times and Prabhupada stopped him. They were driving in a car to the airport. And there was Prabhupada's car and then there was a devotee's van. So he was in the front seat. He was not the driver, but he was next to the driver. So every time Prabhupada's car would come and pass, then he would offer obeisances. And then when they would pass Prabhupada's car, then he would offer obeisances again every time. So then Prabhupada finally saw him, he said, because they kept passing each other. two kinds. There's Dandavat devotees and hearing devotees.
Hearing.
Yes, Prabhupada quoted Srila Bhaktisiddhanta saying there's two kinds of devotees, those who always offer Dandavats and those who just hear sincerely. Yes, Abhaya. Srila Prabhupada's relationship with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was friendly. Yes, he revealed his mind to Srila Prabhupada. In one sense, it was friendly. But actually, he did not have that much association as the other sannyasi god brothers had. I mean, but it was friendly in the sense that when they were together, then it was, yes, you're right. And some of my god brothers and god sisters did have friendly relationship with Srila Prabhupada. In the beginning, he was much more open like that. And then it became more awe and reverence. Prashanta, you had something?
Yeah, I think it's...
Right.
The divine aspect of the spiritual master is really
time for it. So she's saying that when you become more close to the spiritual master, you're just overwhelmed by the vapu and you forget the vani. But you should never forget the vani. That actually, that's the main thing, actually.
One should make an effort to keep time and space for the vani.
One must keep time and space for the vani. Right.
But if one doesn't continue hearing, then that's
good. So she says when you, if you're just engaged in serving and serving your guru and you have no time for hearing, that's when you get in trouble. Okay, now who else? Now, Siddhi.
I would say that
Siddhi
was studying the spiritual master.
Just by serving, okay. So that's a point. Serving the spiritual master, all the imports of the Vedas are revealed. But what is that service? It's the Vani. The real service, there's a verse in Bhagavatam somewhere which I can't remember, is that when you go to hear from the spiritual master, Shotriyam, yeah, anyway, something. I can't remember the exact verse. Vinamali?
Here mentioned Kartikeya is the son of
Agni. Agni, son of Agni. Yes, he's foster son of Agni. Yeah, if you want to read the story, it's Mahabharata. Actually, he's Lord Shiva's son. But then in one sense, he's also Agni's son. Okay, yeah, there are many stories. In Mahabharata, there's another story. Many different stories how Kartikeya was born. Dhammakrishna?
One man.
Yes.
So they were speaking.
Yeah.
And
to chastise him.
Spiritual master is speaking, and you are.
And you are. Yeah, so he was chastised. That was the one time he was chastised by his spiritual master.
Yeah, inside, but like Prabhupada for us is so private. He gets also, how to say, it's eternal lila between disciples.
Right, so Prabhupada was also chastised. Prabhupada talked about it a few times in his lecture. Sankirtan?
I think the East one as a society, so, and we talked about the relationship between disciple to guru.
Right.
We have all the God brothers of the school.
We have all the God brothers too. Right.
To have a reverential and respectful.
Yeah, there's guru, sadhu, and shastra.
But the same relation to the guru is also to the god brothers.
Right. Relation, the same relation of the guru is to the god brothers as well.
And amongst the own god brothers, or the second generation,
yes.
There's also senior. So I think it's not just guru, disciple, that this mentality has to be very straight and very.
And not only, so you're bringing up the point, not only guru-disciple has to be straight.
Familiarity is dangerous there, but it's there.
It's also there, yes, with the other god-brothers of the guru.
Or with devotees, second generation, and the same generation.
Yes.
Familiar,
yes, Prabhupada.
Actually making advance, because the guru is still having loose relations.
Right, so we have to also give the same respect. Prabhupada told us when we were in India, we should give respect to his god brothers. We respect them, but told us not to associate with them at the same time. Yeah, I know. That was different.
But that was. He says if one does not respect the spiritual master's god brother at the same level as the spiritual master, one commits an offense.
Yeah, it is an offense. Okay, Prashanta?
There are etiquettes.
Etiquettes. So there are etiquettes which should not be neglected, given in the Shastra.
Never sit on the same level.
Don't sit on the same level as a guru.
And never use his things.
Don't use his things for your own.
So many etiquettes are there, and you should not.
What's, okay, what was that, Madhavanapuri? Guru Sevi, Guru Bhuti?
Yeah, Guru
Bhogi. Bhogi. Guru Tagi. Guru Sevi.
Guru
Sevananda. So you can either enjoy the Guru, reject the Guru, or serve the Guru. These are the three kinds of disciples. Guru Bhogi, Guru Tyagi, and Guru Sevi. So we'll stop here on this comment, and we'll continue tomorrow. Hare Krishna.